Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Polished Woman, only on LA Talk Radio.
The Polished Woman.
And now, here's your host, the award-winning Jessica R. Bunavage. Hey, Jess.
Hey, Max. Happy March. Happy Monday. Happy Women's History Month. That's a lot of happy.
Lots of happiness.
Lots of happiness.
And you know what's great, Jess, with Women's History Month?
Is yeah.
That I'm proud to say that you are a woman. You're an American now, but you're an immigrant from the Philippines. And you came to America. You had a dream.
Yes.
And Jess, you're making history.
I know. I was just thinking about that this morning. You know, when we spoke, we had, how many guests on our show? Three, almost like 300 or more?
Yeah, it's more. We don't even know.
Yeah. But we had a lot of women come to our show that, you know, share their stories and, you know, did their purpose as we do our purpose here on Earth. So I feel so blessed and so happy that, you know, we're doing something to really help other people. Right.
You know, what's really interesting is they call it history, and it's spelled H-I-S-T-O-R-Y, history.
Yeah, history.
But really, it's her story.
Oh, my gosh.
So here at The Polished Woman, what you're teaching and what you're spreading is her story. So you are creating history in her story. So congratulations. Yeah. You know, this week we're doing a really good show called Teen Trauma versus Teen Drama.
Yes. And, why did we think of this again? Because
we thought of this because last week we had a rocky show. I mean, let's be honest and transparent. We had a rocky show. We had a guest from, you know, that was calling in from Africa. We had a lot of technical difficulties. You know, there was like Mercury was in retrograde. So everything was just like attacking us. And remember, a lot of shows were also canceled last week.
Yeah. So, I thought it was already done last week, I guess.
Yeah. Forged through it. So last week's show was really rocky, even for us here in the control booth and, you know, for sound and audio. Yes. And so it was like towards the end of the show where we really started seeing what the purpose of the show was becoming.
Yeah.
And that's that teens are going through trauma and drama, but they're not processing the trauma because they're so caught up with the drama.
Yeah. Or maybe they don't know how to deal with trauma, just like what happened to me.
And parents don't know how to deal either.
No,
you know?
because most of the time parents don't really know because they don't open up to us unless you began with that relationship of being close to each other. You know.
Well, and it's not like last week you shared your story how your mother was murdered.
Yeah.
So it's not like you had a mom sitting at home watching The Polished Woman, you know, learning how to see things and how to handle situations.
Yeah.
You know, and not everybody has access to therapists and pastors and doctors. Yes. You know, and we have the luxury of that here at The Polished Woman where we can sit down, talk to experts in their field and help mothers and children and teens and families become better at, you know, being happy.
Yes.
But before we get into all the show,
I want to ask you first, you know, help me explain this to them, why we are getting an expert, you know, which is the scientific side of it, and why we are getting a pastor.
Well, there's two aspects.
For the spiritual side of it,
We wanted, here's what Jess wanted to do. Jess came to me, she said, Max, this show is heavy on my heart after last week, let's do the show. How can we do the show?
Yes.
So I said, you know what, Jess, let's get a professional that knows the mind, that has the psychological aspect to help parents, you know, because I'm not saying that a pastor doesn't have that capability, but when somebody studies the mind and studies psychology and studies patterns and behaviors and also signs, you know, it's good to have that kind of a person on the show to give their point of view. Yeah. But then Jess came to me and said, but Max, I love the Bible and I read the Bible and so on. I said, okay. So
and it then helped me.
It helps you. And yeah. That's why it might not help every family, yeah. but it's helped your family through.
Yeah.
So the show is set up in two ways. We have mm-hmm. a wonderful, wonderful guest on Courtney. She'll be with mm-hmm. us in just a minute. And Courtney and you are going to walk through the psychological aspect of trauma versus drama. And okay. then we're going to have Pastor Alita back from last week. And you're going to continue the conversation of how, for you, going to God works.
Yes.
And, you know, and bringing your, and how, you know, reading your Bible and how that helps. So we yes. want to include everybody here. We understand that everybody watching might not read the Bible, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we want everyone to feel included, inclusive. And so we're giving both sides of the psychological and also
I love
the
it.
Aspect.
I love
so
it.
That's how we're going. We're going to get into the show. But before we do that, last week, we kind of very quickly went over that you won a Davy Award.
So
I want to congratulate you again for your Davy Award because, again, it's the validation. Yeah. Do you hear me? Do you see me? Do I matter?
Yeah.
And the Davy Award, they said to you, Jessica, we see you, we hear you, you matter. So it validates our purpose for this show. It validates your purpose. And it also validates that where you are right now, Jess, is exactly where you're supposed to be. And that's making yes. her story history. So I look forward to a great show.
Thank you, love. So,
on that note, here's your host, Jessica, the Polished Woman. I'm going back to the control room. Bye, Jess.
All right. Bye. Thank you so much, Max. For today's quote, I love, love, love this. Speak to your children, since we're talking about children, speak to your children as if they are the wisest, kindest, most beautiful and magical humans on earth, for what they believe is what they'll become. Oh my God, this is so good. I forgot who it came from. Oh, Brooke Hampton. Brooke Hampton, thank you so much. I will always remember this. Yeah, very beautiful quote. So how many times, ladies, have you spoken to one of your friends, or better yet, one of your children or your nieces or nephews and thought, oh my gosh, they're so dramatic after a story that they told you? What if I told you that at least in some cases, what you treated like drama was really a trauma manifesting itself, right? Unfortunately, there are times when we're so quick to judge someone else or brush off what happened to them like it was no big deal, that we don't realize that they may be actually speaking to us from a place of need. As we kick off, yeah, or maybe a pain, suffering that we don't, you know, that they just want to, you know, share to us, talk to us about. As we kick off March for Moms, I want to focus on how as mothers we can recognize and their trauma. Okay, we're talking about, so for the whole month of, March, we are going to dedicate this. We created this hashtag March for Mom. So I hope you will, we're marching together in March, all of us moms and women and ladies. Yeah, we have to come together, women empowerment and help our children. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They're so tired that we need to help them. Anyway. Okay. I'm joined today by the incredible Dr. Courtney Conley. Conley is an author, educator, and licensed counselor who specializes in working with adolescents and their families. And later in the show, we are going to have Pastor Rulida with us. So let's start with Dr. Courtney. Hi!
Hello. Thank you for having me on here.
No, thank you so much for coming to our show. Okay, I'm excited to talk to you. But okay, I have so much question, but tell us your story. And I know that I understand that you were a counselor for high school and middle school for a long period of time. And then you also have, you know, your own traumas and experiences, you know, during your teen years. So can you please tell us about your story first?
Yes, absolutely. So part of why I'm so passionate about doing this work is because of what I experienced growing up. And all of the struggles that I encountered just in terms of trying to figure out who I was and where I fit in and all of these different things that I did that or inauthentic and sometimes quite harmful just to try to fit in and be accepted by other people. Yeah. So my teenage years, definitely a lot of anxiety, depression. And the funny thing about it is you would absolutely never know that. You would never know that.
So you yourself never, you know, knew, yeah, said anything to yourself or did anything?
No, I outwardly, all of my friends, all of my teachers, my mother knew that I was struggling. Okay. And she had a saying.
How did your mom know about that you were struggling?
Oh, she just saw, you know, what I could put on a front for other people, she could see through, right?
Oh,
like yeah. Being self-conscious and wearing sweatshirts in 80 degree weather because I was self-conscious of my weight, never wanting to swim, not taking part in a lot of different, you know, normal activities for teenagers because I was just riddled with that fear and self-doubt yeah. and insecurity and low self-worth and all of these things that I struggled with that I look back on and I'm just like, oh, you know, if I can do anything to help a teenager go through that stage in their life with a few less bumps and bruises, I mean, I'm here for it. That's where my passion comes from.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And thank you for being so honest and transparent. You know, we need that. I mean, like here in our show, I always love when, you know, you advise from your own experience and from your own, you know, from your heart. So you became, did you choose to become a counselor because of your experience and now becoming a doctor? It's because of your experience and now you want to help other people. How was that? I mean, how was being a counselor to all these teenagers for like years?
Yeah.
How was that? Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I honestly say, as much as they probably felt they gained from me and learned from me, I can unequivocally say that I gained much, much more and learned much, much more, you know, from them, really.
What did you learn from them exactly?
Oh, goodness. So I honestly think the most important thing I learned was to sit back and listen. Because teenagers do not feel heard. They don't feel understood.
Yes.
And I can tell you, I think that was a consistent message. And I've worked with hundreds of teenagers. I was a high school counselor for 6 years and a middle school counselor for 2 years. And I'm continuing to do this work in my private practice. I've worked with hundreds of teenagers. And that's one of the most consistent messages that I hear is that they just don't feel like adults don't care, or they don't listen, or they don't understand.
Yeah.
And I know that's not true because on the flip side, I've also worked with hundreds of teachers and parents that I know care.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's just showing that and connecting that, you know, connecting with the teen to let them know that we care. So I think just listening to understand rather than listening to respond has been my biggest life lesson. You know, that I was fortunate enough to gain from the teenagers I've worked with.
Wow. You're such a great speaker. Oh my God. Okay. So wait, so how do you differentiate the trauma and versus drama? Now let's go to our topic.
Yeah. I will say that's challenging because there's so much overlap, right?
Yeah.
And it can look so similar, but I think with the trauma, once you've experienced some kind of a traumatic event, right? And that could vary for sure. There's a lot of variance in this.
Yes.
But whether something's happened directly to you or something has happened to someone who's close in your circle, a friend, a family member, or you've witnessed something, all of those things can lead someone to have a traumatic event, or maybe not as much in the case of our teens, but folks who work in like a first responder type occupation.
Okay.
All of those things can lead to trauma exposure and the impact of trauma. But the way it plays out is so different in each person. And that's why I think it's under-acknowledged a lot in our teens, because we aren't listening to understand, right?
Yeah,
and so we kind of minimize what they're going through. And we think like, oh, it's just drama, or they're attention seeking, or it's this behavior or it's that behavior. And again, like I said, there's a lot of variance, but a lot of times what you'll see is folks wanting that acceptance.
Okay.
So their boundaries are just so fluid, right? And not where they would be, or not where they should be, right? So somebody being overly trusting, confiding in someone, wanting to elicit that sympathy response from them, right? So kind of taking on that victim role, always wanting to talk about their issues, their problems, to gain that attention from other folks. You know, just all out telling you anything about themselves without building that trust and rapport, you know, or relationship first. So those very fluid boundaries is one way.
How do you create those boundaries?
That's doing a lot of intentional work.
Okay.
With the teens to kind of let them know, hey, this is these are some things that you might want to build trust with somebody first before you divulge to them, right? These are things that think about what information you want to give people, knowing where it could potentially lead to. In my experience, that's where a lot of the drama has come from in the high schoolers that I work with that have trauma histories, because they tell everyone and anyone, and then they feel betrayed when that information gets used against them. Or, you know, like a pain point that somebody knows about you, so they use it against you, or they tell someone else and you were telling them not to tell people. I mean, that's where I see a lot of the drama coming from.
But is it okay? Like, for example, I have a teenager right now. It's hard for them to, well, I have a very fortunate, you know, relationship with her, because I started really, you know, being close to her and young, and I started that. So I had already had that, you know, that, what do you call that relationship. But for other moms out there who are listening right now, how do you really get in? How can you let your, how do you say this, your teenagers let in your life? Like, you know what I mean? Or how do you invite them into your life? And how can, you know, can they invite, how can they, our kids, invite us into their life?
Well, let me start with the tip for moms. And it really is the simplest thing. I'm not going to overcomplicate it. I think the most crucial element in building a connection with your child, even if there isn't one there right now, strengthening an existing one, is validation. You know, validation is acknowledging how someone thinks, feels, and letting them know that they matter. Without necessarily agreeing with them. You know, so we can validate our teens' feelings in any circumstance, whether they're upset with us or we're not giving them the answer they want. You know, no, you can't go to a certain party and they're upset or something like that, right? We can still validate that that's really disappointing and you can understand why they would be upset. We can still validate that. And then that allows them to feel heard and to at least feel understood. Your answer as a parent, with, you know, what your intuition is telling you, might still be no, but you forged the way for that connection. You know, and so that validation, just really allowing them that to see that you understand what they're thinking and feeling.
What is the difference between, a similarities from a validation and spoiling them? That's different, right? I know what I mean, right? Sometimes over validation, and then I feel like, oh shit, am I spoiling her already? You know what I mean? Like, and giving them things and stuff sometimes, you know, just to bribe them. What is the difference, you know, between those two?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things too that I work with folks on, specifically parents, because they get validation mixed up with reinforcement, right? If I say, I understand how you feel, it doesn't reinforce the behavior. It's allowing them to know, I understand how you feel, but we're still towing the line, you know? And when you're communicating with your child, if if they're angry and frustrated and you're angry and frustrated, no one's really hearing each other anyways.
No.
So the validation piece, allowing them to see that you understand how they feel, kind of de-escalates situations, because it's hard to argue when I'm saying, okay, Jessica, I can understand how you feel and I can see how you would be disappointed. It's kind of hard to argue when I'm agreeing with your feelings, but that's separate from the behavior. Acknowledging your feelings and making those feel, making you feel heard and important, is different from saying your behavior's okay. But it opens the door, once everyone's a little bit calmer, to saying, I understand you were really irritated, frustrated, disappointed that you couldn't go to so-and-so's house.
Mm-hmm.
But let me talk to you about why, or let me talk to you about how you can act differently in the future. You know, and the same thing with the high school students that I've worked with, you know, they would get upset, curse a teacher out, and walk out of a classroom. I would then talk to them.
So true.
Yeah. Like, I understand you're really mad. You must have been really upset that you felt really embarrassed or whatever, you know. And then they tell me the story. Yes, I did. Blah, blah, blah. Here's what happened. And then once you make that inroad, then you can start to talk to them about a better way, a different way, how you could have handled that differently. Because now you're coming from a place of understanding and you're aligned with them. It's not you versus them. It's you with them.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Wait, so do you think, okay, so now because of this whole pandemic, right? Do you think that this pandemic is somehow a trauma for them?
Oh.
It is, right? For all of us.
Absolutely think so.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And, you know, my counseling inquiries for teenagers has at least tripled. You know, I mean, I can't serve nearly the amount of people that reach out to me. And I don't think that's it's not just a coincidence,
yes,
right?
Yes, I know.
And I know the research will be long in catching up with what, you know, we're kind of feeling and living in right now, but I definitely think it's a trauma. And you have to also understand, with how many things that are closed and opportunities that are different and school that's virtual, not everybody lives in a comfortable environment, right? Not everybody lives in a safe, secure place where they feel loved and validated and acknowledged and, you know, all of that. So I don't even know how that's all going to play out when the dust settles, but I do know that there are kids that are in teenagers that are better off coming to school sometimes, you know, than being at home. And so those are the ones that I worry about too, in terms of the layers of trauma that might be happening right now.
But in your opinion, are there things that parents can do that may make it more likely that their children will be willing to discuss, you know, their traumas, their trauma experiences with them?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think, again, I already talked to you about the big one in terms of validation and trying to understand, you know, their feelings. Mm-hmm. But I also think just being open and honest and showing that you're just imperfectly human, as, you know, Brene Brown kind of talks about. I mean, we're all human, right? And so allowing our kids to see us in an imperfect light, or letting them know what mistake, did something out of fear, you know, that looked like anger and things like that. Just being open and honest with them and is going to be the first step in facilitating them being open and honest with us. You know, we can't expect someone, you know, to come to us and put their trust in us if we're not willing to do the same thing. And kids are intuitive, so they know when things are going on anyways. So you kind of opening that door a little bit, you know, age appropriately, but opening that door a little bit kind of allows them to come in too, you know, and to say, okay, well, my mom's sharing this. So maybe it is okay to talk to her about this. Or
yeah, that's true. Okay. So we have a two Twitter question. What is something you want teens who are watching right now to know about themselves?
Teens that are watching right now. Oh gosh, there's so many things. So let me. Honestly,
this is a good question.
Yes. One.
Yes.
You know, the people around you do love and care for you. They just don't always know how to show it. So give some grace, right? To
okay.
our parents.
Yes.
Two, don't try to do everything alone, right? We find those folks that you can confide in. Hopefully that is a parent, right? Mm-hmm. But we often don't give folks a chance before we even try. Okay. So a lot of times I've worked with teens who are afraid the conversation's going to go this way or that way. And it went wonderfully, right? And they found the support that they were looking for. Yes. So don't just write off your parents like a lot of, you know, like I've seen a lot of teenagers do. So give us some grace. Try, approach your parent with just a little something, right? To see how they react to that. And then build that trust and keep building that relationship, because you want to have, they're your biggest cheerleader. So what we can do to get on your side. Yeah, they're your biggest cheerleader. They really are. And again, they're going to be imperfect just as anyone else is. So give them a try and start building that, you know, relationship to let them in. And the second thing is, honestly, you are in a weird phase of life right now. Just a crazy developmental time. And I'm not going to geek out with Eric Erickson's stages of development, but we know this is a really difficult time because you're trying to figure out who am I, right? And that's the goal of what you're going through right now in these teenage years, is just kind of figuring out who you are and what you want to do in life and what direction you want to start out on. So it is an odd stage of life right now, but you will get through it. You will get through it. So it is a temporary problem. Although it's very real and happening right now, it is a temporary problem. You are going to come out on it, you know, are going to come out of it on the other side. And the folks that can really, really help you with that are your parents and the other, you know, support people that you have.
But how if Dr. Courtney, how if you don't have that supportive parent? You know, how if you have, who do you go to? I mean, it's always good to have someone like you, right? Like when I talk about this all the time on the show. When I was 13, I was molested. 15, I lost my mom and she was murdered. And I didn't have anybody, but I don't know, somehow I made myself so busy. I think I had my spiritual, you know, I had God, you know, guided me. And just, I don't know, how if you don't have anybody? Yeah. How is that? Like lost kids or lost teens? How is that?
Well, one, that's going to make their journey a lot harder. We know that, right?
Yes. You have to be strong, right?
Yeah. And the second part to that is hopefully, you know, with school counselors and school social workers and maybe even a teacher or some adult that they can find to stand in that gap for them, you know, to be that person that can be their cheerleader. You know, that's really my only hope, because
just make sure it's a good person. It's not someone that will lead you to do drugs or, right? I mean,
And that's the scary thing I was talking about too, with like one of those reactions to trauma, with having those fluid boundaries and just the, you know, risky behaviors and, you know, things like that. Because, you know, there's two typical ways that I see it with trauma going, is one I already talked about was those fluid boundaries, but you know, the other way, is being cut off, right? Almost like a porcupine. We put those quills up so no one else can hurt us.
Oh yeah.
So it's just interesting the way, you know, various people react. And then a lot of times there's the aggressive behavior, right? Because, I mean, we're pissed off at the world that this happened to us, right? So, you know, that anger and that frustration comes out in one way or another. And sometimes that's aggressive behavior. It doesn't necessarily have to be physical, but, you know, verbal irritability, moodiness, that kind of thing. Yes. So going back to what you talked about before, about how it's difficult to sometimes tease out what is a trauma response versus, you know, just a typical bad day for a teenager.
Yes.
Right. I think as adults, giving them some grace to have a bad day. And then again, that listening to understand, so we can pick up on those cues and not just jumping to a place of judgment and assuming they're just doing this to be defiant.
I love what you've said, the grace. But it got the grace of having a bad day. I love that. Can you define that? But then again, I want you to answer this other critical question.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you define that first? The grace of having a bad day. What is? Yeah, I love that.
I think everybody, from my 4-year-old to, you know, whoever, you know, we all have bad days. We're all allowed to have bad days. And so our teenagers are no exception, but I think sometimes we expect, you know, that model citizen behavior from our kids, right? We don't allow them to have a bad day. But as adults, you know, we're quick to say, oh, I'm just having a bad day. You know?
Yeah.
So allowing them that grace of having a bad day without making those judgments around, oh, so-and-so just wants attention, or so-and-so's just acting up in class again, or, you know, whatever the case might be.
I love that. I'm going to write that down. That's a hashtag. Yeah. Wait, hold on. So the second question, what do you want mothers who are watching right now to know?
This could be a dissertation, but I want you to feel empowered and to know that some of the small things that you can do, because the weight of the world isn't on your shoulders, right? We want to save our kids from everything, but we know that's not possible. There's the school of life where they're going to have to go through the same lessons that we have. But knowing that you can make a big difference in just those little small ways, but also recognizing that you need to take care of yourself in order to do that.
Yeah.
You need to respond from a place of calm, if at all possible.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, so that you have the ability to kind of take a deep breath and sit back and listen to what your child's saying without also getting defensive and arguing back.
Okay, so actually it's better for us to respond than to react, you're saying basically,
right?
Yeah,
just yes, being much more allowing, being in a good space yourself allows you to respond intentionally versus just reactively, you know, where your child says something and, you know, you don't quite agree with them and then you just jump right back at them, right? So trying to figure out where that feeling is coming from rather than just, you know, that reaction that's going to, you know, spark the argument or take the argument further, and then nobody's getting anywhere. But you can only do that. You can only come from a place of calm if you are putting yourself, making yourself a priority. So that's part of
it. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. That's part of it. So I would empower mothers to make themselves a priority, because that's one thing that I often, there's still this guilt and this feeling of shame. If I do something for myself and my family should always come first. So one thing that I always tell moms as I'm working with them, like, look, if you need a higher purpose for taking care of yourself than just doing it for the love of yourself, then think about it this way. Don't let your problems be the greatest thing that your child inherits.
Oh, wait, that's so good. Can you say that again? Moms, listen to this. That's so good. Okay, say it again.
Yes. So don't let your problems be the greatest thing that your child inherits. We have to take care of ourselves. You know, we have to do that inner work so we can respond from a place of calm and we can be there and stand in the way that our teenagers need us, because they can press our buttons.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. You know, the teenagers are the ones that install the buttons, right? They know how to push them. Oh my gosh. I lived in the Philippines. I live in Asia. I think disciplining was different for me. I was like, slap them, all the time. And then when I moved to America, I'm like, oh shit, you can't do that. You know, because I was reacting and not responding, but now I've learned how to do it. So now I've really learned. Okay, just one last question, because this happened to my friend. I think I mentioned this to you, that, you know, they lived in a very happy family. They would travel all the time together. She didn't really know, you know, her son, you know, was depressed. Nothing was actually, there was none, not even one sign. Except for one, they bought him an expensive stuff and he never, watch, clothes, never wore any of them. That was the only sign. Now, of course, every single mom wants to know, what are the signs? Just, you know, before we go, what are the signs? Just, can you just give us a few? And I think I want to have you again on my show. You're so good. Yeah, just give us one sign, a couple of few signs. Yeah.
Well, I think knowing your child the best that you can, right? Mm-hmm. And looking for any of those differences in their behaviors. So if you're seeing those shifts, being very mindful and in tune to that. Again, there's always the bad day, but then there's consistency, right? So if you're seeing that they're consistently irritable and moody and maybe a bit more sad, or they've stopped hanging out with a particular friend group, or they're isolating a bit more, especially among teenage girls, the alienation piece is big, that whole relational aggression, they call it. So leaving one person out or things like that. So that's why I mentioned the change in the peer group, just kind of being aware of, okay, what's going on, and keeping your finger on the pulse of your child's just social interactions and social life. But I would say definitely withdrawing, engaging in more risky behavior. The simplest way I can put it is just being mindful of when there are shifts and changes in your child that don't really make sense, right? That you can try to open up and have a conversation with them about, or talk to them about, or even offer to have them talk to someone else. You know, there's a lot of times.
Who do they call, if ever?
Well, you can always start, you know, with your school, because they should have resources between the school counselor.
That's true.
They can point you somewhere. You know, there's a lot of different avenues, but I mean, a lot of folks aren't really sure where to start, so they start with the school, right? If you are looking for a counselor or a therapist for your child to talk to, and you have insurance, you can always get a list of providers from your insurance company. And then you can go from there and finding someone, word of mouth. You know, a lot of times people will be like, hey, I need a good therapist, or whatever. And somebody might have a recommendation, but I can't tell you how many times moms will say, I said that exact same thing to my daughter, and she'll listen to you and not me. Right.
Oh, that's so true. Oh my God. That's so true.
So sometimes just providing that outside unbiased third party, who's not so entangled in the relationship, can help. You know, but if you have concerns, I definitely say, one, go right to your kiddo and say, hey, I'm concerned. I'm scared. This is what I'm seeing.
Where can they find you? Oh my gosh, Max, can I have you back on our show? I feel like I want to talk to, you know, because we have to, how can our guests find you?
Absolutely. So my website is a great place to start. So it's just Courtney-Conley.com.
I post it on our IG also. Yeah.
I'm on Facebook, Conley Empowerment. And then if folks are interested and want to read more about the whole validation piece and whatnot,
you have a book, right?
Yes, I wrote a book. It just came out.
Yes.
You probably can't see it very well with the light, but it's called Your Daughter Doesn't Have to Be Miserable.
Can you show it?
Yeah. So it's Your Daughter Doesn't Have to Be Miserable, an approach to supporting your teenage daughter through depression.
Okay.
And so it starts out with empathy, and then really ways to care for yourself, because that's a long journey as a mother, supporting your struggling teen. And then ways to connect, like the validation piece and infusing positivity in the relationship and things like that.
I want to have you back next week, Dr. Conley. Is that okay? Because I want to talk about your book. I want you to share things, the chapters of your book that you can, you know, and let all these moms buy your book. Thank you so much, Dr. Conley. Dr. Courtney, I'm going to have you again tomorrow. Moms, ladies, we're going to have her again. I love the title of the book. I want to talk about it. Yeah, and I want to do a Facebook Live with you. All right. Thank you so much. See you again next week, Dr. Courtney.
All right. Thank you, Jessica.
And now we are going to have Pastor Rolita. Hello. So now we're going to talk to Pastor Ro, because now, hey, Pastor Ro. Now I want to talk to all these women about the religious part of it, why it is important, the spiritual part of it. You know, yeah, we had the psychological, you know, we have the psychological, the scientific part of it. And now I want to go why it is also important to have, you know, to have faith, to go to God and have the spiritual, you know, belief or aspect on the problem. Hey, Dr. Rowe, welcome back. Thank you so much.
How I know are you being busy. How are you doing?
Oh, you look so pretty. Oh my gosh.
You're doing beautiful.
Okay, Pastor Rowe, let's get right into it. How do we bring our teenagers to God? Because it's hard, right? You know, sometimes they, it's hard for us, you know, like every Sunday you have to wake them up. They're, you know, they don't want to go. They don't want to come. They don't want to do Bible study. How do you start that? Especially, you know, if they're kind of like older. Yeah. Right now.
Well, we have to communicate. What is it about them that they don't want to get up? What is it about church? What is it about God? What is it about their belief system? The other thing we have to do is be honest with them. The other thing we have to do is not make, thank you, God, not make our miracles private.
Oh, I like that.
We have to publicize our miracles, our blessings, our deliverances. There are times when our children, teenagers, see us as superheroes.
Oh.
And we have to let them know, I've gone through trauma, I've experienced pain, and there are days I didn't know when God regulated my mind, but because he is a mind regulator, he gave me a peace. And there are days when we're in the middle of a storm and God doesn't calm the storm, he calms us in the storm. Now, if you were a teenager, wouldn't you want to come to God?
Oh, my God. That's so true.
You would want to come to God when you are able and honest to show them this is my testimony. I mean, our children haven't seen the breakthrough of the trauma that we've gone through because we come across to them like we're perfect. But we're really survivors. And when you're a survivor, it doesn't mean you're okay. You still need someone to talk to. You still need to admit what happened. You still need to embrace your feelings about what happened. The Bible says, cast all your cares, your anxiety, your stress, your depression on the Lord, for he cares for you. We don't use those scriptures for our teenagers.
Yeah, no.
We don't tell our teenagers, hey, God cares. Listen, sit with me. I'm going to show you how I talk to God, and then I want to know what you think. And then we have God, listen. I keep going around this bush of, I had trauma in my life. I had all my siblings.
But Pastor, did you have God already in your life when you had your trauma? Can you share us a little bit about your trauma?
We go through many things without God.
Yes.
And have trauma. Mm-hmm. And if you look back over your life, you'll see where he kept you. You'll see where he had his hand on you way before you reached out to him. See, the Bible says you didn't choose him. He chose you. So there are times when you went through things and they were negative things or they were things that just had to happen because God knew that your misery was going to one day be your ministry.
Oh, what? Oh my God, that is so good. Wait, what is the trauma that you encountered? And, you know, tell us.
Before I gave my life to Christ, my mother died when I was 4 and I was raised by my grandmother. Aww. She was born in 1914. So there was a lot she didn't say. My mother left 7 children.
Aww.
And my grandmother had 5 of her own. And she worked 2 and 3 jobs. And I was the baby. And I had to figure it out. And then I'm from an extramarital affair. Yes, I had siblings who didn't want me.
Oh.
So I've experienced some stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then being from the projects, when this is a particular, and I want to show this because this seems simple, but it's big to a teenager or a child. Yeah. I was from the projects. We loved it. We didn't have no problem. My grandmother was good to us. But one day I went to school. I was in the third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy named was Craig. And the teacher pulled up a picture like this, you know, and said, "What is it?" And everyone in the class raised their hands. So you know what I did.
Yeah. What did you do?
I raised my hand. And you know what she did.
What did she do?
She called me. And I stared at the paper and stared at the paper, and I never knew what it was, never saw one a day in my life. And that kid, Craig, he said, "You don't know what that is? You're stupid." And he said, "It's a lawnmower." Well, I guess when you're from a place that never uses one, there's no grass. We wouldn't know that. But from that day on, I went into a shell and experienced that kind of stress. And then I went into a defense mechanism, ready to fight, ready to bite, ready to whatever. And don't ask me ever again, because I'm never answering.
Wow. Are you going through this right now? Are kids going? Do you think kids are going through this right now?
I'm hearing, talking to teenagers, that teachers are telling them just quit. I'm from teenagers, and teachers are telling them, "You will never go to college. You're not the material."
That's not nice.
Yes, teenagers are telling me this. Teenagers, I'm not making this up. So why am I saying that? Because then they go home and do what? They don't talk about it. They battle. They have a battle in their mind.
So they keep it. They keep it to themselves.
They keep it to themselves. And then on top of that, you're being rejected by someone who's supposed to applaud you on top of, let's go with teenage boys. They like a girl, but they don't want to ask her, or they've been rejected. Let's go with girls dealing with puberty. Let's deal with pimples. Let's deal with anything that children are going through. Let's deal with an alcoholic father or an abrasive mom, whatever it is. And they are home and they go to school and don't say anything. And the case in point, there's a principal, I think, from Illinois. And there was a teenager who came to school with a hat on and refused to take his hat off.
Okay.
Refused. The principal called him in the office and said, "What's going on? Why can't you take your hat off?" And he said, "The barber messed up my hairline.
Yeah.
And I don't want anyone in school teasing me or saying anything.
Yeah.
I will kill somebody. I will hurt somebody."
Oh.
Catch this. That stuff that's never been dealt with.
Yeah.
What did the principal do? He left school in a blizzard, went home and got his clippers and said, "Let's make a deal. If I straighten up your line, would you take your hat off?" And then he began to pour into him. Like the scripture said, "I care for you. I love you. I will cover you.
Yeah.
Let's get through this together. Even if your line was messed up, there's other, you got to get focused." And we don't make those kind of deals with our teenagers.
Oh, that's
what
so
do
good.
We say?
What do we say?
What's wrong with you? Something's wrong with you. You're crazy. Get it together. You're so disrespectful. They're teenagers. They're too young to be grown, and they're too grown to be young.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. 1 minute. 1 minute. We have 1 minute. How do we bring it to God, Pastor Roe?
You have to bring them to God by being an example.
Yes.
You have to be the example. They never heard of the word trauma. We know what it is. Why aren't we telling them? We've been through stuff with baby. Listen, we haven't had no food. It was the Lord that took that chicken and that spinach and broccoli or whatever. That's what we have to say. We have to say, "Hey, listen, I took uppers to be down and downers to be up. Listen, until the Lord became my peace, my strength and my joy. I've learned to hold to God's unchanging hand. He loves you that much. Let's try it. That's how you bring them to God. Be an example in front of them instead of telling them, you need to go to church. You need to get God.
You can't do that.
No. But they do it all the time. And if you are always sad, depressed, broke, miserable, why would I want to serve your God?
Oh my gosh, that's so true.
He said, the joy of the Lord is your strength. He said, your eyes have not seen, neither your ears have heard, neither has it entered into the hearts of men, the things that God has in store for you. Teach them how to imagine. Teach them how to have vision. Teach them how to focus. Teach them that faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things you don't see. If you see $1 million, that's not evidence.
It's not.
I mean, that's, you don't need faith. That is evidence.
Wow. This is amazing.
In this minute, too many times we keep showing them evidence where they don't need faith. And we need to teach them faith. Faith, family, friends, and fun.
Okay. Thank you. My God, that's so good. Wait, Pastor, what do you want the kids to take in this week?
I would love for the children to, before the children, I would love for us to understand love and then show it to them, demonstrate it to them. That's what I would want them to take in. It's okay to be embraced. You can trust us. We need to do check-ins. It's okay to check in. How you feeling? What's going on? I'm not going to say nothing. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to dictate. I just want to hear you. And do you mind if I come back to you and check in a couple of days?
That's so good. Oh my God. Pastor Rob, thank you so much. This is so, it's so powerful. I love our show for today. It's exactly what we needed. Pastor Ro, thank you so much for your time. I know you're so busy. Thank you so much. We don't have time. Oh my gosh. I love you. I love you. And I hope to see you in person and give you a hug.
I can't wait and I'm ready.
I know.
Thank you so much for inviting me again to your show. Yes. You're incredible. Maximum success to you and keep doing it. You're going to see the children change. The teenagers. Aww. You'll see it.
And if you can see it, you'll see it. Aww. Bye, Master. Thank you so much. Ladies, I hope you enjoyed our show. And please don't forget to give love to the next person that you see after watching and listening to our show. We'll see you next Monday. Follow me on Instagram @thepolishedwoman. Bye. Oh my God, this is so good.
Through faith.